What's going on, guys? I'm Alex. Welcome to another episode of the BSR Show. We are the Black Series Rebels. With me, as always, is my boy, Stephen Ellis.
What's happening, everybody?
Quiet on the set. Quiet on the set. Hold. Hold the work, people. All right, we're bringing talent in. Talent's coming in. Please, yep, everybody give it up for Cisco Kid.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Salute
Hold
to you.
Hold the work. Hold the work. Give it up for Cisco Kid.
I just want to say a quick cheers and salute to my boys on a happy Ding Dong the Witch is Dead day.
We are recording this on February 10th, 2021. May Cara Dune rest in peace. You know, my first serious girlfriend, this is not even a bit, my first serious girlfriend broke up with me. You're gonna need those handy for what I'm about to say. My first serious girlfriend broke up with me, and she got sued by the record companies for using Napster in high school.
No, she didn't.
Yeah,
she downloaded that much music that they went after her.
Yeah, she was one of the few people that was in like the Rolling Stones article.
Wait,
whoa! What?
How much music did she download?
It wasn't about how much you downloaded. They set these booby traps of like 30 to 50 songs. Ooh. And if you got all of them, it was like motherfucking Pokemon. Like, you caught them all and you also caught a fucking federal indictment. She breaks up with me.
It was like Britney Spears, Backstreet
Metallica.
Whatever was on TRL Live that month. If you got all of them.
No joke, dude. She breaks up with me and the federal government slaps like a slaps her and her family with a $25 million lawsuit.
Did she immediately call you and go, who do you know?
I just said, it's funny because all my friends joke about back is karma. It's a thing that happens. And I just want to remind Gina Carano, you blocked me. And now look what happened. You got fucking hit her with it. Back is karma. Don't be blocking Alex Backus and don't be shit posting all day. She truly, like, talk about all you had to do was shut
we'll
up.
We'll
get into it. Boy, oh boy. Whoopsie.
What a day.
What a day.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah, Alex.
What's going on this weekend? Movie news. Hey, Steve, what's going on this week in movie news?
Well, shit, guys. You know, not going to lie. Didn't prepare a lot because breaking news, everybody.
Yeah.
Didn't see this one coming, did ya? Our boy, Jermaine Lucier, it looks like he broke the story earlier this evening that Gina Carano, some of you know her as Cara Dune in the Disney Plus TV series The Mandalorian. Lucasfilm put out a statement saying that they're no longer in business with her. She's fired. They do not condone her social media posts. She's gone. Bye-bye.
Wasn't there literally just a report yesterday or the day before that she had apologized to Disney for her?
Oh, I don't know. Did that
social
happen?
Social media activity. I feel like I saw that. I don't know if maybe I'm just crazy, but I thought I had just seen that, and then today she just like it's like she couldn't help herself.
The statement says from Lucasfilm, Gina Carano is not currently employed by Lucasfilm, and there are no plans for her to be in the future. Nevertheless, her social media posts denigrating people based on their cultural and religious identities are abhorrent and unacceptable.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've kind of litigated the Gina Carano story quite a few times now on this show. Do I think this is the right move? Absolutely. I don't even know. I mean, I've been so busy with work. I just know that she said something in comparison to her and the Jews and the Holocaust, or like the way cultural.
Oh, no, she said that being a Republican today is like being.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to repeat it.
Hey, quick counterpoint. not being lined up and burned and murdered in camps. Just quick little counterpoint to your fact there. Also, some of those folks that you're saying are being treated like Jews are kind of holding Nazi paraphernalia while they storm our Capitol.
And they're getting organic fucking meals in jail. Like, relax.
Yeah, I think, like, let's like just say it for what it is. She spun her wheels out. She just couldn't stop. She clearly is a prideful person that didn't like getting called out constantly and has wacky, some pretty gross opinions. And what's going to happen is going to happen. Cisco, if I said any of that stuff, you would come right to me and be like, bro, you can't say that. I don't want to be affiliated with you on this podcast. And it would go vice versa. We should all be holding ourselves to that standard. And, you know, Disney's in a complicated position with stuff like that, right? It's like they're a giant company. They have morals that they stand by as a company, but also, right, like it's hard. Does she have the right to say what she says?
She has the right to say whatever she wants, just as yes. She also has the right to
be fired to for
the,
it.
the repercussions of it.
Yes, exactly. And that's all I want to say about it. Like, I think it's the right thing. Do I think the Mandalorian's better off without her? Yes. Do I think she was super important to the Mandalorian? Not really. Like, I don't know. What are your thoughts, Cisco?
Good riddance.
What are your thoughts?
I also think that it's deliberate on her part. I think that she was literally begging to be fired for months. And I think that this is all strategic on her part to
get out of any kind of contract that she has.
Yeah.
Look. Yep.
Yes. She wants to play the victim and become a martyr for the alt-right. Great. And
Newsmax is hiring. They'll take you. Great.
Yeah. And she's going to spin it all to be like blaming it all on cancel culture. Blah, 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 blah.
Here's the deal.
I don't care.
I'm just going to say it. She fucking sucked in the first season. And they went, okay. And then she started showing a little bit of her crazy, and they really limited and reduced her role in season two. And I'm willing to bet she got a little like confident based off of the response and how popular the first season was. And she got a little confident and a little cocky. And then when she got kind of pretty much reduced, which happens often in a lot of series, because they got to take that money and pay for other things. And Lord knows they had to pay for a lot of other shit and other actors this season. And I'm willing to bet she got pissed off about it and she wanted out and she couldn't get out. Either way.
Yeah. I mean, I think too, like there's probably something to be said that, like, you know, some people don't realize what they sign up for when they sign up for something like Star Wars. Like, you know, there could easily have been a naive quality in the sense like, oh, well, I'm still going to, you know, tweet and have my opinions. Like, I obviously, like, you know, a lot of these people aren't going to agree with me, but like, they're not going to want me off Star Wars. They're going to like my characters. Like, no, you don't understand how this works. Like, Star Wars is like, and all pop culture has gotten to a place where like it is, it's fused with people's identity. And if they feel like the thing that they love is being tainted by something that they find reprehensible and despicable, they're going to speak out about it. And, you know, we can litigate that till we're blue in the face, but the facts are the facts. And she said some really terrible things, and Disney has the right, just like she has the right to say that shit. They have the right to fire her. And I think they made the right decision. What else is going on this week in movie news, Steve?
This is a recommendation. I'm a digital subscriber and have been for years to Empire Magazine. It's one of the last, in my opinion, true sort of movie magazines out there. Edgar Wright completely curated this month's issue. That's basically all about like the love of movies and the movie theater experience. And he interviews many directors and whatnot for this piece. There's a really great one where for the first time he called up Kevin Feige since he left
Ant-Man. Oh, whoa.
And they had like their very first sort of call and conversation and email. And it just totally, like, you know, they picked up right where they left off. 'Cause Edgar was like, I can't do an entire, I can't curate an entire movie magazine about sort of the love of cinema and the cinema going experience
and not talk about the MCU
and this and that. And, you know, he says it wasn't like a bitter ending or anything. It just was sort of like, I'm done and that's that. But over the course of, you know, his work on Ant-Man, he'd become really close with Kevin at that time, and they hadn't spoken since. And so it ended up being a really good thing. But the other thing is that there is another podcast that, if you don't listen to it, you should check out, the Empire Film Podcast. There's an episode that I listened to this week with Edgar Wright and Quentin Tarantino talking about their favorite, like, experiences in a movie theater.
Oh,
and it's really good.
You didn't send me this?
I'll send it to you.
Inflammatory Star Wars tweets and not Quentin Tarantino and my favorite director having a quick sit
down. That's why I'm here. You know, I'm bringing it to you. So, it's about a two hour long pod. And what's really interesting is he reveals on it that, they've been part of sort of a makeshift quarantine movie club for the last 9 months. And, Scorsese actually ended up kind of curating it. What does he say? Let me see here. They talk about how they've gone down the rabbit hole with the hours indoors that they've had. Tarantino added that, you know, Edgar's more social than he is. It's a big deal that he's been talking to him consistently for 9 months. But the bulk of their film club was curated by Martin Scorsese, who sent Wright a recommendation list of nearly 50 British films that Scorsese considers his personal favorites. And the last 5 months, Wright spent in lockdown before resuming on Last Night in Soho. You know, he's just been powering through them. Anyways, it's a really good listen. I really recommend you guys check out this podcast.
How long is the episode?
It's like 2 hours.
Oh, inject it into my fucking veins.
And we don't have, like, and it's very common with podcasts today and their guests and whatnot. And listen, we don't have the best audio quality. I'm certainly not the best editor when I'm doing this thing, but Tarantino's like, you know, he sounds like he's talking into his MacBook without any headphones on or anything, but it doesn't matter. They're just nerds.
He just slid three lines of blow, and he's like, let's talk about movies, man.
He's got this great story about, like, they're talking about their favorite moments in cinema, sort of like reactionary. And Tarantino has this really good take talking about, he's like, you know, there's the big moments that everyone always talks about. And he's like, but I don't want to talk about those. And he starts talking about really intimate personal stories of, like, how, you know, he, all of him and the people at his, the film, the VHS rental place that he worked at, all went to go see Aliens in Westwood at like a 4 o'clock showing, and how they didn't realize it, but there was like, just, they didn't think when they were showing up that it was going to be this big deal, but there was a line all the way around the block for like a 4 o'clock showing, and that James Cameron was actually there, and like, not like just, not like waving and whatnot. James Cameron was there making sure that, like, the people in line were taken care of, making sure that, like, the picture was right, that the sound quality was right, that was, you know, and he just, it's a really interesting story and perspective. And so it got me thinking about some of my experiences in movie theaters that, like, I will always remember. And I wanted to see if you guys have one or two moments in a movie theater where, whether it's a moment where all the audience gasps or just some experience that you've cherished and you hold on with forever. So, Cisco, do you have anything?
That's a good question. Let me think about it. Alex, you go first.
Alex, you want to go first? You guys want me to tell mine so you can think about yours?
You can tell yours.
All right.
I've got mine.
So, Alex, then tell, you've got yours. Tell them.
First huge one is, I very vividly remember seeing the Fellowship of the Ring when I was a junior in high school. And I remember we got there late. My mom was like, oh, it's not going to be popular. It's Lord of the Rings. I was like, Mom, we got to get there fucking early. It's going to be, we have terrible seats. And I remember we got there and, you know, we had these far right hand aisle seats, like we were all the way at the end on the aisle, like, in the middle.
Steve opening night seats. I see.
We're getting there. That's where I was, and I was like, ah, it's fine. And now I always, because of that experience, buy my tickets on the aisle. I don't buy them in the middle because that movie had such an impact on me. I prefer watching the movie on the aisle. I don't like watching it in the middle. Other big, huge one is, man, I remember seeing Dark Knight the first time and turning right back around and being like, I have to go see that. And I saw it three times the next Saturday, like back to back to back. It's like, I have to watch this movie. The hardest I ever laughed in a movie. There's two, Something About Mary, when I snuck into that with my cousin, and then Little Miss Sunshine. I remember that movie really, really, really hit me in a really strong, profound way. And then another big one that's more recent is, and this is excluding like Star Wars, like obviously like every time that crawl comes up, it's like an out of body experience for a new Star Wars movie. But huge one was Get Out. Man, Get Out in the theater. Like I saw that, I saw it seven, like I'm the lucky one here who like I'm a little younger, and Steve-O's not a big like midnight movie guy. Like he likes to go at a time when like he doesn't fall asleep. I really try to see everything the first showing, and I saw it by myself. I was like, I have to see this movie. I have to see what this movie's all about. And I remember that like the whole like as soon as that like chant came on, I was just like, this movie's about to melt my brain. And it really stuck with me. So those are just a few.
Okay. So I have a lot of the same ones that like, I feel like I've talked about a bunch of times, like seeing Batman in 1989 for the first time after waiting all day to see it. Jurassic Park, similar story, but I want to fast forward a little bit to being a little bit older and getting into very specific type of independent film and where I was kind of expanding my taste a little bit. And I remember going to go see Requiem for a Dream at the Lemley in Pasadena. And, you know, just hearing a little bit of kind of like positive vibes about it or positive reviews about it. And I remember just thinking like, I had seen, I'm trying to remember. I think I had seen Pi already. Like I had seen Pi on VHS, and that movie kind of blew my mind. And I was like sitting there with my friend going to go see Requiem for a Dream and was blown away by it just visually. The opening sort of like montage is so beautifully shot. And the music is so good that I was immediately just like struck by this movie. And then by the time I walked out of the movie, I was just like broken. Like I was like, I cannot believe that this is a movie. And it just wrecked me. I remember going to go see Iron Man with
Iron Man is a big one for me too.
With I have a group of buddies that we would go watch our sort of like nerd movies together. And it was usually at the time it was like at midnight. So, you know, we had done it with Dark Knight and we did it with Iron Man. And I remember just being like anticipating it, but not knowing what we were getting ourselves into. And then being again, just blown away by it. Going to go see Force Awakens with my now wife, who got into Star Wars because of our relationship, and sharing that experience with her for the first time, watching a Star Wars movie in the theater for the first time and doing it together was a very unique and amazing experience, because it was something that I didn't think we would ever be able to really do again for something new. And it really made me happy. But, you know, I've been lucky enough to be able to see some pretty cool things. Oh, you know what? This is a weird one, but going to go see Raiders of the Lost Ark at a midnight showing at this little theater called the Rialto in Pasadena. They would do these midnight showings once a month or whatever it was. And a buddy of mine and I just decided, if I could, we'll go to one of these midnight showings on a Saturday night and go watch Raiders of the Lost Ark. It was absolutely bonkers. We got smoked weed before, got high as fuck, went to go watch the movie, and just had an amazing time sitting in the most uncomfortable chairs you'll ever sit in a theater, watching one of the best movies you'll ever watch.
I got a little extra one before you get into yours, Steve. I saw Kill Bill at a midnight screening for the Tarantino Fest they did before Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Tarantino was in the front row. And as the credits rolled, he got up and the fucking crowd realized it was him. And there was only like 10 people in there. This movie started at midnight. It was like, there were maybe 15 people in the audience, and he fucking stood up and the place was like, holy shit. Yeah. And this is the dome with like 15 people in it. And he totally was like, and he just fucking left. It was such a G move. Like, nobody knew it was him. And it was like, that was fucking Quentin Tarantino. He was here. Awesome. It was amazing.
So I've got some weird ones. These are not your typical like movie, like, oh my God, sort of moments. These are just these are experiences at a movie theater, going to see a movie that I will never forget. And
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
13th birthday was that movie, followed by a trip to Bullwinkle's, which was basically Chuck E. Cheese, where I got the entire Kenner toy line of Prince of Thieves.
Everything I do.
Wait, hold on. Your 13th birthday?
Yeah, bro. I still played with action figures when I was 13.
Tight. I love the honesty, bro.
Yeah. And way beyond.
Bullwinkle's, though.
Bullwinkle's, Rocky and Bullwinkle.
I might not let Bullwinkle slide, but it was
Rocky
figure.
And Bullwinkle version of a Chuck E. Cheese.
I remember Bullwinkle's. It had mini golf too.
Yeah. So, first off, I'll never forget one of my first movie going experiences in it up in San Jose and up in the Bay Area. We didn't have AMC's until I was like, I don't know, freshman in high school, maybe in eighth grade.
Yeah, we didn't get Megaplexes in Pleasanton either.
Yeah, I mean, we had a Megaplexes, but they weren't AMC. They were Century Theaters was the big brand in my area of Silicon Valley, which there is, like, there's still actually one in here in Southern California. It's, like, in North Hollywood. But they used to have this opening that was, like, their logo thing that was, like, the feature presentation thing. And it was this thing that everyone like clapped to, and I can't remember the clap to it, but it was this thing where everyone in unison would do it before every movie and do the like clap. And it was, I remember as a little kid, like being like, this is fucking great. Everybody's clapping together. But it's just that moment where as a kid, I just am like, everyone was just super stoked to be out at a night at the movies. And it was a thing that went on for a while, and then they obviously got rid of it. But I very vividly remember getting to go to a sneak preview of Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Oh,
with my two best friends. And we walked to this movie theater. We were like, I must have been 14. So I was like a freshman in high school maybe. And we walked to Burger King and got a bunch of Whoppers. And then we snuck them into this movie. And And the scene to get into this sneak preview was insane. It was like, you have to remember, it was like the one of the heights of Howard Stern and Shock Jock. And just everyone that was there was clearly partying. And the place inside was like Woodstock waiting for this movie to start. They had, like, people were going nuts. They had the big, like, beach balls going everywhere. And we're, like, 13, 14 going, this is fucking awesome. And my buddy Ryan's like, watch this. And he takes one of the extra Whoppers, and he just, like, flings a bun. And then and then flings a patty. And then flings tomato. And, like, just is, like, piece by piece. And then my buddy Chris is like, fuck it, watch this. And he just lobs up in the air a full-blown unwrapped Whopper, and it hits this older dude in the back of the head sitting, and he turns around and stands up, and before he can say a word, a big dude behind us stands up and goes, sit the fuck down.
Yes! He knew it. He was like, that shit was funny, bro. Don't be fucking with these kids.
And I just like, and we just both sat down like, oh my God. We were just young kids that got caught up in like just the pandemonium of the excitement of this fucking movie. You know?
That's great.
And then another one that I really remember is actually Get Out as well. Now, I was working in Hollywood, so was Amber, and I said, Amber, we got to go see this movie. We're going to go see it tonight. It was opening day.
You mean working in the city, Hollywood?
Yes, we were working in the city. We were working like...
Yeah. We had been working in Hollywood for 10 years.
On Hollywood Boulevard. And I just said, listen, we're going to go see this showing at 6 o'clock. Get off work a half hour, early. Make sure you can get done at 5:30 because we're over there at like Hollywood and Cherokee. It's the Arc Light. And so we go and we're sitting there. And I know I've told parts of this story previously, but Amber's like freaking out in the lobby and is like, oh my God, that's that girl. That's that girl from Girls. That's that girl from Girls. And I was like, oh yeah. Uh-huh. And then as we're like going up the escalator or whatever, I'm going, oh wait. I was like, she's in this fucking movie.
Yeah.
And then we sit down and then her and like three of her friends sit down in front of us. And then BJ Novak from the office comes and sits down next to her.
Did we see this together?
No.
We were in the same theater.
Okay, so tell me if you remember. So first of all, BJ Novak, I was like, and I know it's a weird thing of me, but BJ Novak's like, I was like, he's first of all, he's put ketchup on his hot dog. Secondly, he's eating.
Watch it, Whopper. Watch it, fucking Bullwinkle.
Secondly, he's eating a fuck. He's like sucking down a hot dog in front of Allison Williams.
Who? What are you doing?
Like he's just like, ha. And I was just like, wow.
Hey, and where'd you guys watch it at the Arc Light?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Their hot dogs are trash.
Bro. I know.
They're like, and dry. Terrible.
I was like, okay. But I have to say, it was a very interesting thing to be in a movie that was so good to begin with, but also with like the one of the stars of the one of the two leads and sort of experiencing her watching it with a crowd and seeing how the crowd reacted. Now, I have to say, there were certain members of this crowd that obviously knew she was there and were obviously intensifying their vocal reactions to the movie in an exaggerated form, in my opinion. At the end of the movie, a lot of these people realize that she's there. And we're just sitting there. And like Amber and I sit in a movie theater all the way through the credits. And sometimes we sit and we're talking. And like, that's just how we are at movies. We always sit and we're talking. And we're doing that. And like her friends are like, that was really great. That's awesome. And then one by one. And then all of a sudden all these droves. And even one person who's been on this show, the outlaw, Rubens. Mr. fucking Rocha.
Oh, Rubens was in that theater too. Okay.
Rocha fucking comes up and just is like, I'm laughing because I know of him as like on Collider and whatnot, but he's just like, Allison, that was phenomenal. Like that was some great work. That was just phenomenal. And mind you, I'm an asshole in the back going, the fuck are you doing, Rocha? Like, what are you doing? Stop gushing. Like, but
you're alone.
It was just a weird experience to be in a movie with one of the stars and sort of watch, like sort of just take in her experience in a weird way. So, obviously not her experience, but just witness that. It was very weird.
I've had a similar one where I saw Keanu with Alex Rubens and like the whole cast was there. We watched it in the dome and like he bought everybody tickets cause like he couldn't get us all into the premiere and we went and watched it in the dome. And I remember really enjoying it and just like seeing his face at like his movie on the theater. Like we talk on the show, we get cynical, we mock people that do dumb shit. We get critical of brands. We also get really stoked. I consider us one of the more positive shows that talks about fandom and pop culture. Like I really think we're probably one of the most positive shows that talks about this kind of stuff. But like, it's when you boil it all down, man, it's just artists making stuff and seeing those people, whether it's Tarantino or Allison Williams or Alex Rubens, watch this thing that they worked on. That to me is always like the really special thing. And there's a reason why a guy like Edgar Wright has such a strong connection to the movie theater, because for him, it's this sacred place where his art is revealed to the world, and he doesn't want to lose that. And I think it's, I think that, you know, that's, the thought of losing movie theaters is so terrifying to me because I haven't reached that goal yet. I'm like, please God, I need that. Like, I need that goal. That's one of like, that's like the, that's the main, that's the finish line, is that theater. They are this magical, beautiful place. And just hearing all the stories, Cisco, you with Stacy seeing Star Wars, Steve, you chucking a Whopper as a kid, like, like I remember the roll at my Regal, there was a roller coaster. It would like go up the roller coaster track and then it would like go down. Oh, and
you're,
like go,
you're at that one. I remember always driving by that one and being like, whoa.
Off 580?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I that was my theater. Like, didn't that one had an IMAX, right?
Yeah, it was my first job. Worked there for 3 years.
Yeah, I remember always driving by. There was an actual
roller coaster?
Yeah.
No, well, it was like the pre-movie show was like a roller coaster, like a CG roller coaster. And you like go up and then you'd go down and it was like, there'd be like a popcorn that exploded.
But that was that was the IMAX like opener, right?
All of them had it, okay. But the IMAX had it too. And then like, there's like a frosty soda that like spilled and you were like, whoa, and you go around it. There was always one asshole that would put his hands up like, oh, I'm really on a roller coaster. And I'd always go boo when I was seeing a movie because I thought it was such a hacky, a hokey bit. But like, yeah, man, that's also, did anyone else here work at a movie theater?
I didn't.
No. Only me?
No, I never
did. That's the other thing. That's like a whole other list of memories. I have the working at one memories. I worked at one for almost two and a half, three years. It was my first job. I went over and worked at an FYE briefly and then went back to the movie theater. But I was the only employee, dude, who every single break went and watched a movie. The only one. I went, this is what I would get. I'd take my break. My first 10-minute break, I would call it super popcorn. This shit's disgusting. You were only allowed to serve yourself in Dixie cups because it was the only thing that wasn't inventoried. So I would get like five Dixie
cups.
That's
what we used to do at Qzar.
Yep. I put them in a tray and I would put popcorn in the Dixie cups and I would just pump butter. To where like you could see the butter at the bottom go like start absorbing.
Oh no.
And I used to just like, it was cheesy. And then the other trick, no pun intended with cheesy, the other trick we used to do is like, this kid was like, bro, have you ever tried popcorn with nacho cheese? And I was like, no. And he's like, it's delicious, but we inventory that nacho cheese, bro. So here's the secret. This is what you got to do, bro. I was like, what do I got to do? He would take a Dixie cup and he would fill it with nacho cheese and then put popcorn on top of it to block it. And then he would fill the rest with popcorn and then eat the popcorn on top and then dip in the cheese in the dark theater. It was disgusting. And I used to do that every 10-minute break. Ooh. But no, like my lights out, my 45-minute lunch break, I'd go to fucking Fuddruckers because we had a Fuddruckers. I'd get a burger to go, disgusting ass. And dude, just cheap.
I hope you brought your own toilet paper.
Bro, I mean, dude, I was 15, bro. Movie theater TP
ain't nothing to mess with.
Bro, I'm good, dog. I went to the Fuddies. I would get like my little burger to go and I would get my fries. And then I'd like march back and I would eat it inside a theater, probably watching a movie I'd seen 100 fucking times. And I'd sit there for 45 minutes. And then that's why I begged to get switched to usher, because you got to watch the last like 10, 15 minutes of a movie and then clean the theater. So like you didn't get to do that in concession. You just had to hang out with the weird kids that like would like put their balls on the hot dogs. Like you don't hang out with those kids. You don't.
See?
Let me put it this way. Don't get the hot dogs. Never get a hot dog in a movie theater.
God damn it. God.
Let me tell you this. Well, sir. You never want to eat a hot dog in a movie theater.
Well, check out Edgar Wright's Empire, like this issue of Empire. It's called The Greatest Cinema Moments Ever. You got Steven Spielberg, James Cameron, Tessa Thompson, Jordan Peele, Patty Jenkins, Bong Joon-ho, Spike Lee, Chris Evans. I mean, just all kinds of people. It's a great thing. It's a British movie magazine that I've been obsessed with for 20 years now. and I get the digital issue on my iPad every month. Definitely, if you're a movie fan, that is the magazine for you to check out. In terms of other news, Cisco sent over a good little piece here. Good news for a different person in the Mandalorian world, the Mandalorian himself, Pedro Pascal, and Game of Thrones' Bella Ramsey to star in The Last of Us TV adaptation. Now, I know since the quarantine sessions, we've been sort of, you know, talking about The Last of Us and Last of Us 2, and did you know they're going to be doing a show? And anyways, Chernobyl creator Craig Mazin is headlining this thing. And yeah, I know you guys are huge fans. You guys stoked for this? What do you think?
Couldn't have gotten better news. Pedro Pascal is fucking rules, man. Yeah, more Pedro Pascal all the time.
You like him over the guy that plays Jamie Lannister?
I don't care.
Oh, yeah.
I don't
absolutely. I think Pedro Pascal is a better actor.
Right.
Oh, for sure. Pedro Pascal is a better actor. I also think he's just a more interesting choice. Mm-hmm. There was also rumors that Mahershala was in the running, which like, ooh.
I think that could have been really cool.
Yeah, I was like, that's – so – and this is no dig on Pedro, but Mahershala is like – that's like a next level actor. Yeah. Like Mahershala is like Marlon Brando status. So like when I heard Mahershala, I was like, oh, like my face was melting. And then I was like, that's cool.
I was just thinking about Mahershala Ali the other day because I was like, I can't wait for that Blade movie, man. To see him as Blade?
Maybe that's why he didn't take it. Maybe he's like, nah, man, I got my franchise.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not going to have time to do that.
And then that girl that plays Lyanna.
That's the one I'm stoked for. That's the one I'm really excited for. That's perfect. I love these Twitter dweebs that are just like, I don't see it. It's like, shut the fuck up. You don't. What don't you see? What don't you see? You haven't seen anything yet. Stop.
I think the reason is because, especially from the first game, that character looks so much like Elliot Page.
Yes.
And, you know, I think, you know, purposely so. I think.
Well, Elliot sued them.
Right. Exactly.
And won.
Yes. So yeah. I think that, you know, you get that image burned in your head and you think that's who you want. But it's like, it doesn't matter. Just get good actresses. You know who would have been really good also? And I mean, you know, obviously I'm stoked for her, but the little girl that played the main character in Logan.
Yes. She's Russian, right?
No, she's Spanish, I think.
Spanish. But she has a thick accent. Maybe they auditioned her and she couldn't break it.
I don't know if she does or not because I thought she did. I think isn't she in that show on his Dark Materials and she doesn't have an accent?
I
have
no idea. I just remember like, cause she doesn't really talk in Logan. So I could be totally pulling this out my ass, but I feel like I remember being like, no, I mean, she's a great choice though. Like acting wise, totally has the chops. But also I guess, does it really matter if Ellie has a Latin accent? That doesn't either matter really either anyway. Like none of that really matters.
He has a Spanish accent.
Yeah, so totally. Is Pedro Pascal, is he Spanish?
So
like from Spain or is he from South America? Where is Pedro Pascal?
He's Ecuadorian, I think.
He's Ecuadorian. But it's funny that you brought that up because I was just about to share. I saw this earlier this week on Instagram. Dante Bosco. Cisco knows Dante Bosco, played Rufio in Hook. He posted I follow him on Twitter, and he posted a picture from high school of his high school yearbook where he went to school. And what's funny is Pedro Pascal, otherwise known as Peter Balmaceda, is pictured above him. I'm going to share this photo here in a second. But I was just cracking up because I was like, where's Pedro? And then it was like, oh my God, he's right above you, right above him, you dummy.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, here, I'll.
What, they go to high school together?
I don't know if you guys can see. But yeah, they went to high school together. That's Pedro above Dante there.
Oh my God. That's
oh, that's so funny.
He's from like San Diego or something, right?
Yeah, it's it is what's the school?
Or the Bay Area?
No, it's Orange Area? County High School of the Arts.
Oh, Orange County.
Class of 1993. That's so funny to think
like class of 93, Rufio is literally king of that fucking school.
No, in fact, like, someone commented, I saw because it's the first comment on the thing, and someone was like, oh man, you must have been so popular and this and that. And he was like, quite the opposite, man. I was just another kid. Like, we all were trying to make it, and we all were, because it's a school for the performing arts. And he was just like, we all were, you know, we were all about.
But he had already been in a huge movie. Oh, at that
I know.
Point.
I know.
Multiple huge movies. It's not even just that, right? He had a couple of like teenage, like early, like kids movies that I love that he's in. But obviously Hook is the one that he's most known for. But shit, I have to go look at his IMDb. There's a couple that I remember loving.
I got to meet Dante and his brother in like, it might have been like 99 or 2000. They were filming this little movie that they made together called The Debut. And it's a little independent movie about a Filipino girl's, I think it's like their 16th birthday, basically. And they had this whole dance scene at a school that was in the next to where I went to college. And they just had a bunch of kids from the Asian Student Union at my college come and play extras. And so my buddy, who was kind of like one of the leaders of that group, was like, hey, come down and hang out. And I was like, all right, cool, I'll come. And I just spent the day. I wasn't in any of the scenes or anything, but I got to meet Dante that day and his brother, and they were majorly cool dudes, man. Like super cool, down to earth, chill. Yeah. Dante Bosco's red.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Let's see here, guys. What else is in the news? Elizabeth Moss is going to be joining Barry Levinson's movie that's all about the making of The Godfather. That Armie Hammer was originally
canceled.
Was originally supposed to
stop it, bro. He'll eat you. Be careful. Yeah. He's going to eat you, bro.
But now, we're getting Jake Gyllenhaal, who will be playing Robert Evans. Oscar Isaac is going to be in it.
Jake Gyllenhaal's Robert Evans.
Oh, I can't wait.
I'm into it.
I can't wait.
Alex, have you ever seen The Kid Stays in the Picture?
Oh, my God. Alex, you got to watch it.
Wait, which one?
The documentary, The Kid Stays in the Picture, the Robert Evans. Dude, you got to watch it.
It's a fascinating
It's a book, but like, watch the doc.
Yeah, all right.
Kid Stays in the Picture. I mean, it's just a great Hollywood story.
It's also, they did some really cool things that they borrowed from like Dogtown and Z-Boys, where they took photos and animated them in this really cool way. Yeah. And
man, I'm going to go rewatch that.
That's a really good
I'm going to go rewatch
send
that.
Send me
that.
A link.
I have that book as well. It's great.
Send me a link to that.
But yeah, she's going to be playing, I believe she's going to be playing Coppola's Wild, if I'm not mistaken. excuse me. Let's see here. You know, it's just a bunch of movie news. There's not too much. I don't know if I'm missing anything.
Hey, we got some big movie news out of the way already.
Yeah, we did.
We got big stuff.
Oh, what'd you guys think? Let's end with this big piece here, because I'm sure we've all got a lot to talk about it. The biggest news of it all. WandaVision.
Oh.
Episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take it home.
Episode 5.
Oh, is it episode 5? Episode 5.
Yeah, it's 5.
Guys, the door is wide open now.
Kevin Feige just fucking draining threes from downtown. And
doing it on TV.
Remember, what's that? There's that great Snoop Dogg and Michael Rapaport tweet where he's like, he don't miss. He doesn't miss, man. Ice in the veins. He don't miss. That is Kevin Feige.
Yep.
In fact, Cisco, I'm putting our man on the record right now. Steve, you text us.
I did.
And you said, after you watched it, you said, I see it now.
I said, I
what
see
did
it
you
now.
See, Steve?
I said, I see it now. And had I predicted the future, I would have said, you don't see any Marvel talent being fired for their stupid ass tweets.
Not even the one problematic guy. The semi,
so
arguably problematic guy.
So
they even brought back James Gunn.
Marvel, my boys, is the gold fucking standard.
Thank you. I'm going to relish this moment because I believe we had to talk about it where we got pretty heated. And we finally got to this moment.
Alex,
you finally came around.
Steve-O, you got to find the audio of that argument if you can in one of our episodes.
I don't even, that's so much listening. That's so much listening. Listen, going into pre-Wanda, I've been ranting and raving for the last couple episodes about this show in particular. And I also have to remind myself that Marvel has had 10 years to iron this whole thing out and do what they do, but they have never had the, in my opinion, the baggage that so many other IPs have had in their management. And I got to tell you, even though they may not be my favorite films and they may not be, just that they may not be like my favorite films. I do love a lot of them. I got to tell you, the management of this property is everyone needs to take a goddamn note and get in step because, the fact that they were able to pull something off like they did in this episode, like just in my opinion, and I know that it's not easy to do what they did, but they did it with like such a just minuscule moment that was so monstrously monumental is like insane to me. And now I know my wife had no idea why I was just like, and whoa, like this is a huge deal. This is a big, big deal. And to do it with someone like that character and that actor, Evan Peters, is just like, and I love Evan Peters. Like, I think he's great. And he's the greatest thing to come out of American Horror Story, in my opinion. Like, he's a great actor that deserves a shot at a lot more roles.
Hey, don't sleep on the fact that he was Michael Scott's punk ass nephew that got spanked.
No, I'm not. I know.
Like, even more so than that, like, let's like really think about that choice. They're basically extending this branch that's like, hey, we're game if you're game. Like, there's this like almost like watch, like we're just going to go fucking nuts here now. Like, and I guess it kind of makes sense after watching Endgame this past week and just realizing the spectacle that is that movie. It's like, well, what do you do next? You start bending our minds and you start getting incredibly comic booky and you start going in these wild directions where now it's like, what does this mean implication wise? Like, okay, so those X-Men, all those X-Men movies are technically an alternate reality of the MCU? Or is it none of that? And it's just that actor is now going to play her brother and they're like, she just recast him and it's a cute little Easter egg. Like, what are they going to do? And I have a feeling, judging by the title of the Doctor Strange movie and some of the rumors we've heard about the Spider-Man movie, is they're like, fuck it. We're going balls to the wall with all the Marvel properties. You're going to have Deadpool surfing on MODOK's head with, you know, you're going to have, at this rate, dude, I wouldn't be surprised if Miles Teller's Fantastic Four is in a Deadpool and he's like, ooh, that was rough. And they're like, sorry. Like, it's become such a crazy, awesome choice. I was floored after I saw it and I cannot wait for the next episode.
The sheer amount of speculation and theorizing that I've done since last Thursday with all of my groups of friends is nuts. Like, it's all over the place. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, just like all the possibilities of what might happen, what could happen, what I think will happen.
My buddy Wong's texting me about it while we're doing this episode. Yeah. Cause he's like out of thought. And I'm like, bro, I can't talk. I'm doing an episode.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a bit of movie news that we didn't mention that was kind of big that happened this week. We got our first trailer of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yes.
We did. Which I have to say, personally, is the first time I've actually been excited for that show.
It looks great.
I thought that trailer was really well done. And if they lean into the buddy copness of that duo, I think that show can be a lot of fun. It's a tough act to follow. You know what I mean? Like, having to follow up what Wanda is doing right now. We don't know what that show is really going to be yet. But what I got from that trailer, now I am actually into it and excited for that show. I was kind of like about it before.
Here's what I'll say. Like, how do you follow any number of amazing Marvel movies? Fucking Kevin Feige, just, he does it. Like,
yeah.
And I just go, oh, it's just going to be different. It's going to be different than WandaVision. It's going to be like a buddy cop, like, fun adventure show. Cool. Yeah, it's just not going to be.
It's going to be more procedural, I think.
You know, the big question will just be, does it feel like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or like one of those shows?
I can't imagine that.
I don't think it will. It's going to feel
like... It just doesn't look like it. You know what I mean?
It's going to feel like a low-key Marvel movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, this one to me looks more in the vein of like they had a script idea for it as a movie, and instead they chopped it up into 8 30-minute episodes.
Yeah, man, we'll see.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Can't wait for all of it.
And if they do this, like what they've done with WandaVision, it's like I can't imagine what they're going to do with Loki.
Yeah, Loki looked nuts. Can't wait for that too.
Like, I don't know.
It's all tying into something big. I have two theories that I want to put out there.
Sure.
Aerospace engineer.
Yes, I agree.
Oh, yeah.
You agree with me, right?
Reed Richards, right?
Yeah. It's got to be Mr. Fantastic Four.
Which, by the way, I barely watched any of the football thing. The space travel commercial. I was like, is that a Fantastic Four teaser? Did you guys see this thing? There was like a trailer for basically for civilian space travel. There was a commercial for it, and I forget what it's called, but it starts with an F, and there's a four in it that looks like. And so I immediately went online thinking it was a Fantastic Four teaser, and it's not. Mm. It's an actual commercial, I think. With I don't know, but yeah. Anyway, sorry.
The Fantastic Four is real, dude. That's what big Wanda twist is that we're actually we're in the MCU right now. Mm-hmm. Oh man, I'm stoked, dude. I'm super, super stoked. I'm really
Did you have
excited.
Another theory you're going to throw out there?
Oh, and then I think it's, that's the big one. Second theory is that I feel like it's probably Patrick Stewart. Is the scene at this point? I think that's probably the scene
Paul Bettany
is
talking about. Yeah,
I think the show ends on that.
Yeah.
Or Sir Ian McKellen.
Alex and I were talking about it, I think via text or maybe on the phone the other day, and I was saying that I think that Alex said that, and I said that I think that it's going to be a case where he's going to be telepathically sort of communicating, and then
through the universes
or something, and then. I think Alex hit the nail on the head where she's going to end up popping up in Cerebro.
That's a good theory. My theory was that she brings him to basically help her subconsciously. Like, she knows that she's broken and she needs help, and that she reaches out and finds the one person that couldn't help her. And
I mean, I'm hoping that it's like Wanda, like you hear the, like his little voice and he's just like, I help people like you all the time, Wanda. Like, just that like little moment where he's like, I help people like you, implying we're about to say you are no longer an enhanced person. You are a what, Cisco?
Mutant.
And then like the whole screen turns into a genetic thing, just like all the X-Men. I don't know. But
yeah.
Also, fun theory, and I'm going to give you props for this, Steve, because I think you hit it. How sick would it be, though? How sick would it be if one of these episodes coming up is animated in the style of the 90s X-Men show?
That would be bad. Yeah.
If it was an animated 90s X-Men show, and when they introduce Patrick Stewart at the end, it does that. And they
Guys heard this theory that
it's so sick, right?
Somebody mentioned this to me, and I can't remember who. I apologize, but have you heard this theory that the reason why the shows are all based on these sitcoms are that they are Wanda, they are what Wanda grew up watching, and so she is recreating them.
I assume this reality. So. That's what I
assumed. I assumed that's kind of what it was. It was like. Or her perspective of like the nuclear family is what she learned in on American sitcoms in Sokovia. And I noticed her accent kind of came back.
Her accent came back when she was out of it and was doing that like thing with the sword people or whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think they're kind of implying that like she turns it off.
Well, they said that I did see a thing. It was in my news and we just didn't get to it a week or two ago that I remember seeing a thing with her saying that it gets if you're paying attention, it gets explained. So I assume,
I mean, I think it's probably pretty clear. It's some type of weird, like she pops in and out of it. She's like hidden that side of her life away. I could see her having it when homeboy gets there. Cause even he doesn't have a Sokovia accent now, her brother. So well, like,
it's not him.
Exactly.
Right.
Right, right. See, he's from a different universe.
He's her brother in a different reality.
Right.
Or it's all of this is just speculation, and the big thing is quite literally, oh no, we just recast him because we know you guys all liked him. In the same way we brought Jonah Jameson into Spider-Man. Like, we just recast the same character because we know you like that one from the other movies and we own the IP now, so it makes sense. But in a weird way, Jonah Jameson is kind of the first preview that they would start doing stuff like this.
Yeah.
Because J.K. Simmons is technically wasn't in the Tom Holland Spider-Man universe. He was a Tobey Maguire relic, and he wasn't in
Garfield's.
He wasn't in the Andrew Garfield one.
Exactly. Yeah. He was in the Tobey. So I'm saying it's like we know that the Tobey Maguire Jonah Jameson is like beloved. We should just bring him back.
He's the only one that can play that character.
I love that he's now like a Alex Jones. It's so funny.
Right.
That's such a smart move to make him all Alex Jonesy.
Now, what happens when or if Tobey Maguire ends up popping into the Tom Holland Spider-Man universe to see the Alex Jones version of his old boss?
He's going to be like, hey, I know that guy. I'm so curious about what that movie is going to be.
I don't know that they're in it. I don't know that
all,
they're...
You think it's all Big Deke?
I think it might be a Deke. Obviously Marvel hasn't confirmed anything.
But Marvel's not involved in that. Well, they're not as involved. It's more of a Sony thing, isn't it?
No, Marvel has pretty much creative control of the story. Sony just has the license.
Marvel, this is the last one?
Yeah, this is in the MCU. This is the third and final Tom Holland movie. Now, what this could be the kind of thing where like Sony was like, if you want to do a multiverse thing, we're willing to play, but are you willing to like let Venom exist in that space and kind of let us keep doing our thing on the side? But I just don't know. Like Kevin Feige, the one thing I'll say I'm nervous is I don't want it to balloon where the quality becomes confused and diluted. Cause I think the Marvel Cinematic Universe has established itself as by far the best superhero universe. Like, it's not even close.
But I still think it's bad for business for Sony to not continue doing this partnership with Disney. I just do.
It's terrible. It's terrible for business.
I think it's bad for business, and it's like, no. I don't know.
Venom was cute. There's not going to be more, like, more where that came from.
Here's the wrinkle, though. It is bad for business. We all know that. But, you know, they don't get it. But it's good in the long run to let them – burn themselves out.
Well, I was gonna say,
Fox did.
Well, I was gonna say, when does their
it doesn't
like, exclusively run out with it?
They just have to basically give in and be like, we'll sell it back to you the way Fox did.
Basically, Disney would have to buy Spider-Man from them for probably a couple bill. Like truly, it would probably be like $3-4 billion to buy.
And it would have to get to a point where they saw that they were incapable of making it work anymore.
And right now, that's not the case. They're still making a lot of money on their non-MCU Spider-Man properties. Hence why we talked about Spider-Verse, which a lot of us have hailed as being the best superhero movie ever made. So they have the ability to make those. And I think that,
but it's consistency. Can they do it again?
Exactly. Right. Sony has proven that they can make very good superhero movies. Their problem is they get stuck in the reboot phase where they constantly like try to restart it. And it's like, no, you have to figure out a way. And you're lucky because everybody loves Tom Holland. He's young and he clearly loves being Spider-Man. Like, just let him be Spider-Man and then introduce Miles Morales and then have Miles Morales be Spider-Man and then have all of them exist within this MCU, you know? Spider-Gwen, just copy the Spider-Verse movie. You know, maybe don't do Spider-Ham in the cinematic universe, but either way, the very, very excited for the future superhero movies. 1 in 10 people in California now has the vaccination, which means in a few months we'll be watching Black Widow in theaters, hopefully, boys. We're almost there. We can do it. We can get there. I feel it. I'm predicting, fingers crossed, that in July it'll be safe to see movies in the theaters. That's my prediction. I think it's probably more realistically like October or November, but let me have this, Steve. Let me have it. I see your face over there. I see your face. Let me have this. He really wants to ruin it for me.
I let you have September last year. I'll let you have this one.
You're such a dick. You're such a dick. You're such a dick.
Bom, 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 dick. Bom.
Seriously, you're such a dick. Not, you oh, God. Dick. Man says it's his church, doesn't want to go back. He's a blasphemer. Hey, Steve, Cisco, where can the people find you at home?
They can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CiscoKid with 2D77.
Where can they find you, Steve?
You can find me retweeting BSR and not having an opinion on Twitter at Rex Manning. Or if you really want to know what I think of movies, you can go see what I rate them on Letterboxd.
You can find me at Alex_Baggers on Twitter, where I also don't really have an opinion. I just tweet GIFs of the movies I'm watching. You can check me out on Letterboxd, where I just reviewed Nomadland, Judas and the Black Messiah, as well as Trial of the Chicago 7. Those are the three I watched this weekend. They were all fantastic. And you can find my creative stuff at www.alexdoesstuff.com. With that being said, guys, we'll see you next week on BSR. Laters.
Guys, I'm here at Pixar. I'm about to go in, start working on a collaboration project with Pixar. Just kidding, man. I don't play that soft little baby shit, man. That's Satan all day, that evil Satan stuff, heavy metal shit, man. I don't fuck around with that little baby shit.